So yesterday I commented a bit about the importance of building a firm foundation, and today's first reading follows the pattern of constantly going back to the blueprints and making sure you actually know what kind of foundation you're building. So a good example is, in fact, what happens in today's first reading. It's chronologically quite separated from what we experienced yesterday, where the people of Israel, the people of the kingdom of Judah in the south, eventually had to turn and give their hearts and trust to God rather than through military might, and the Assyrian Empire was somehow, by some miraculous thing, was held back by God's power. And then a little bit later, you get what's called this moment, under the kingdom of Josiah. King Josiah becomes king of Judah, and he wants to start reforming the people of Israel. And in this process of reform, he wants to be able to renew fidelity to God, and so he starts renewing the temple and going through it. And so he sends a bunch of guys to organize it, to plan it, and not only that, to clean it up a bit. And in the process of house cleaning, they found the book of the law. The equivalent would be is that in a moment of difficulty and darkness, a young man all of a sudden finds the Bible he received at his confirmation, but he'd never used ever since, because him and his family, they went through confirmation and they dropped the church like a ton of bricks. And then all of a sudden, in fixing his house, he finds his old Bible and starts reading it again. And then all of a sudden has a brand new life. Well, that's what's happening in today's first reading. The people of Israel found the book of the law hiding away, shelved in some obscure part in the temple and never used. And eventually they read it out loud and the whole people are just shocked. Where was this all the time? And so they begin to realize that in the book of the law, it says, unless you remain faithful to this law, then gradually your entire life will become a curse. In fact, it's warned in the book of Deuteronomy where God says, I'm giving you a blessing and a curse. If you abide by the covenant I'm giving you today that I'm not forcing you to take, but if you actually receive this covenant but then abandon it, the covenant becomes a curse. And then they start thinking, oh, well, no kidding. Maybe this is why things have gotten so bad. This is actually why, even in the Bible, in the New Testament, we don't encourage people to treat baptism or the sacraments lightly, because to enter into them flippantly usually results in a bad reverberation. And like in any relationship, the moment we feign intimacy, it makes it harder and harder for that relationship to heal. Every time we do a fake I love you or a finger behind our back kind of statement of intimacy and love, it usually makes the relationship all the more difficult to deepen. And so the people of Israel collectively repent under King Josiah and then begin a renewed Israel. That lasts for about a generation, and then it all goes back to the way things were just before. It just, that whole cycle just kind of continues all over again. And it's interesting because this cycle of a following generation having to atone for the sins of their forebears is also very much connected with today's two martyrs, Thomas More and John Fisher. So Thomas More and John Fisher were both martyred under King Henry VIII of England when he wanted to succeed the Church of England from the Church of Rome. Because in the very beginning, Augustine of Canterbury brought the Catholic faith, brought the Christian faith to the people of England. And so there was always that connection with the Church of Rome that was different than, say, places like Turkey or Syria or something like that. So they had the faith. They were intimately connected with the Church of Rome. And gradually, the Tudor household comes into charge. That's Henry 6, 7, 8. And Henry VIII shows up. He wants to marry Catherine of Aragon. The Pope's like, well, your cousins are already married, so this is already getting kind of dubious. Henry VIII insists. Fine, the Pope says. You can marry her. He doesn't get the kids he wants. He wants to dump her. This sounds not all that unlike what we see in today's world, where people want what they want and be damned anything else. So he wants to now annul this marriage because you can't divorce in the Christian tradition. Jesus is very explicit. There is no divorce. So he wants it annulled. He wants the Pope to declare that it was never a marriage. And so you can start to see the dark underbelly of the church in the 16th century. He sends his monkey, his lackey, Cardinal Wolsey, to Rome to be able to somehow get this annulment. Because this cardinal, wolf in sheep's clothing, pretends to be a shepherd of God's people and is more interested in power. You have the exact same thing in France with a guy named Cardinal Richelieu and Père Joseph, two of some of the most nasty people in all of history. People that use the trappings of the church for their own political power and well-being. If there's a place in hell, it's got guys like this in it. Not necessarily them, but guys like this. Because they use this religious and spiritual authority to somehow prop up their own political power. And the Pope, not because he's a saint, but mostly because he's afraid of Catherine's family, refuses the annulment. So, by happenstance or not, he's faithful to what the church expects. And the king then gets upset. And like a child who throws a tantrum because he doesn't get what he wants, he starts sending all of England into an uproar. And eventually writes what's called the Act of Succession, which basically says the king is in charge of the church, not the Pope. And he starts forcing all of the people in Parliament and all the bishops to sign off on this little document. Eventually, Cardinal Wolsey, because a bad tree can't bear good fruit, eventually he's removed in disgrace and Thomas More is replaced as his chancellor. So you go from a bit of a dirtbag bishop to a very noble man. And this noble man, not nobleman, but noble man, he refuses to sign this document. He doesn't openly criticize the king. He just says, can't be done. You can't, no matter how much you try, change what marriage means. Just goes on and on and on. So he just doesn't say anything. And the king really wants him to sign because everybody respects Thomas. By this time, most of the bishops have signed off. By this time, most of the members of Parliament have signed off. But now they, in a sense, have all revealed themselves to just be political lackeys themselves. John Fisher, there was a point when he, in fact, supported the king, and then he's like, ooh, no, I really shouldn't, and then recanted. Both of them, in the end, were executed. And Thomas More died with that famous line that is recounted in that story, that play, A Man for All Seasons, I am the king's loyal servant. But God first. Here's the trick. I know the names of John Fisher and Thomas More. And I know the name of Cranmer because I have to, because of history. But which one in the end was actually faithful? The one who heeded the words of Christ, that knows exactly what he said in the Gospels, or the ones that basically figured that the smart thing to do is to get by because that's just what the political thing would just happen to be? I have heard too many times in my life, and it drives me nuts. Where is the spirit of the age taking us? That's basically code word for what does the world tell us to do? What does Christ tell us to do? Being a faithful son or daughter of England, a faithful son or daughter of Canada, does not mean that, in fact, we have to be self-righteous noodleheads and constantly screaming about righteousness, etc. Thomas didn't do that. Just stayed firm in his conscience, stayed firm in his knowledge of the truth. He did everything he could to train and teach his daughters, his family, the importance of an education, the importance of staying true to the truth, and being true to who Christ is. But sometimes the greatest success is being a failure. But he's in heaven now. So who won that battle?